Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
You're listening to Griefcast with me, Carrie Adloyd. How do we actually grieve for someone? How does it change and evolve as we get older? My dad died when I was 15, and it took me many, many years to be able to express what I had gone through. So I decided to create Griefcast, a chance to talk, share and laugh about the weirdness of grief, death, pain and agony, but with comedians. So it's not that depressing, I promise. It's bleak, but you'll laugh as well, which for me is a perfect night in. Each week on Griefcast, I talk to a different comedian about their own personal experience of grief, as we remember someone special that they had lost along the way. It's not easy to talk about death, but it does help if you've chosen a career designed to hide your true feelings about anything emotional. Whether it was long ago or you've just lost someone, Griefcast is a chance to talk about the peculiar human process of death.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Thank you so much for downloading Griefcast. Please do subscribe on iTunes or on the Acast app, however you say it, Acast. And if you like the podcast, please do rate and review on iTunes. It helps other people find the show. You can also follow us on Twitter at The Griefcast or on Instagram / The Griefcast, because you are not alone. This week I'm talking to Amy Hoggard. Amy is a comedian and writer. She starred as Poppy Carlton in the faux reality show Almost Royal and has recently become a correspondent for the excellent Full Frontal with Samantha Bee. Amy came to talk to me about her dad, Simon Hoggart, who died of cancer in 2014. Hello, welcome to Griefcast. I'm here today with writer, actress, comedian. That's all of those things, right? That's fair, isn't it?
Yep, I'll go with that.
Go with that. Amy Hoggart. Sorry, I always do that to everybody because I think everyone I interview is like, there's so many things. And then I think, oh, do you
Do you like that many descriptions? Some people get like quite uncomfortable as I start listening.
I didn't enjoy hearing it.
Yeah, no one does. But,
I wish I was a teacher.
But you are a writer, actress and comedian.
It's really bad though, because if someone asks me what I do for a living, I just wriggle away. Or I say something like, I work in comedy or something. I don't know.
But it's so, because I've had it with so many people on the show, and you are a writer, an actress and comedian.
Or, but you feel like if it's an artsy job that you're... at what point can you call yourself that? And if you've been paid to do it, but you might never work again, so what if this is literally the last day that I ever do anything in that area again? And
so
then,
it's true for this moment.
Yeah, I'll commit to that right now and then reassess.
Yeah, we'll reassess tomorrow.
Yeah.
Amy Hoggart, performer.
Once comedian writer.
Once now, writer, actress, comedian. But then you might just, you could only lose one of them for like a week.
Yeah. I'm happy that you said it. Saying, what do you say you do?
Oh, yeah, no. So, Amy, thank you for coming.
Thank you for having me.
Who are we remembering today?
My dad.
Your dad?
Yeah.
What's your dad's name?
Simon.
Simon Hoggart, who was, of course, a broadcaster, writer, comedian himself. When did your dad pass away?
He died January 2014.
Oh, wow. So you've just had your anniversary.
3 years,
Three-year anniversary. Oh, yeah. Which
sounds very romantic, but I'll tell you, it wasn't.
Sorry, yeah. It's because I always am very interested in the anniversary, obviously, because it's for, I think if you haven't experienced a lot of grief, people don't realise that you have this
big day.
This big day, yeah. How was your 3 years, was it?
3 years was, it's funny because my mother puts a lot of emphasis on anniversaries, so it's, but there are so many anniversaries. There's like when he got diagnosed or you got told, but they just naturally are, or like his birthday, or there's just, it feels like there are markers throughout the year, and I try not to think about it too much because it just creeps up when it creeps up.
Yeah.
But on the actual anniversary, we all went for dinner, but we went, so me and my mum and brother, we went for dinner, but we ended up at this like quite hip place by accident. We went to Caravan in King's Cross. Oh. There's just loads of art students and really loud music. And my mum's like, you know, she's going to at one point like take everyone's hands and talk about like how he'd be so proud of us and stuff. So it was really, I just felt really uncomfortable. Like, I can do that in the kitchen, but there are just loads of people with, like, sideways bowl haircuts, like, normcore glasses staring at us.
So you had a slightly cool anniversary.
We're really cool.
Yeah. 3 years is quite, I think 3 years is quite tough because, obviously, 1 year is really hard. It's so raw. 2 years, like, is also hard, but I think 3 years when a lot of other people have forgotten as well. So you start moving into that weird space where maybe other people around you don't remember as much and...
Well, because my dad died at the beginning, it was January the 5th, so now the listeners can know the date and remember with me, because he went into hospital at Christmas. Everyone knows that Christmas and New Year are quite hard for me, so actually people are good in the that period. We timed it quite well in terms of people giving us attention.
Oh, that's good, yeah.
I can't take credit, but yeah, people are really sensitive around me at that time.
That is quite good because you've got the Christmas, New Year, so people remember that anyway.
Yeah.
And then you can be like, oh, and it's his anniversary.
Yeah, it's a big, big time for me.
Big time guy.
And it's quite a slow time of year.
Yeah, it's true, not much going on.
Yeah.
That's good.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, you got to get something out of these things.
Yeah.
So what did your dad die of?
He had pancreatic cancer, which your dad had as well.
Yes, I know.
It's very rare.
Really rare. And when I read your Guardian article about your dad, and this sounds awful, but people will understand, like, I got a bit excited because I was like, oh, wow, pancreatic cancer.
Yeah,
like,
I did with you.
How exciting. Yeah, it's like a weird... Like, because there's the club anyway, Dead
there's
Parent
Club.
Yeah. And then there are obviously subsections of the club.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. So there's, like, the cancer club or the heart attack
club. Dad or mum as
Definitely.
And then what?
Yeah.
So we're in... I mean, we might be the only members.
Yeah.
I'm very small.
And pancreatic cancer.
Yeah.
Yeah, pancreatic cancer is... it's horrid.
I didn't know.
Well, what I've heard... Again, I'm not a doctor. This is going on.
Don't do yourself down. Yeah. We can add it to the list.
Yes. Doctor, comedian, actor. Is that it's... The problem with pancreatic cancer is basically there's no symptoms.
Yes, yeah.
I get slightly... I don't know if you have this. Jealous. So say somebody's parent died of... like a heart attack or breast cancer, and they can be like, hey guys, you should check, make sure you do this. Whereas we can go, oh, I can't give any advice, or
there's nothing
you can do, there's no symptoms. It hasn't had its funding increased. Oh, hang on, let me get this right. It's one of the like the fifth largest causes of death of cancer. So it's really high up.
Yes. Really?
Yeah.
Because there's no funding.
There's no funding.
For research, so
yeah.
You've got a really low survival.
Yeah, and its survival rate hasn't changed since something like the 1950s, where if you look at something like breast cancer or like liver cancer or anything else, because they're sort of more obvious.
Yeah.
Basically, there's sexy cancers.
That's what my mum says, sexy cancers.
And there's pancreatic.
She says that about breast cancer, and I first misinterpreted her. I was like, you can't say that.
But it's true. Yeah. I did a fundraiser for the, which I haven't talked about, actually, the Pancreatic Cancer Research Fund, so PCRF.
Yeah.
And that's when I found out loads more. That's the only reason I know all this
stuff. Great fact.
Yeah, and they were based, like, the funding hasn't changed since the 1950s, and the survival rate, I'll double check these facts when I edit this podcast and put the right ones in.
Just insert that sounds a bit different.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So here are the actual facts. Pancreatic cancer is the fifth most common cause of cancer deaths. It has the lowest survival rate of all cancers, and it's the only cancer that has seen no improvement in this for 40 years. It also only receives 1% of research funding from the major funding bodies. For more information, see the PCRF, Pancreatic Cancer Research Fund, or the PCUK, Pancreatic Cancer United Kingdom, for advice, where you can fundraise or donate. Back to Amy.
We didn't find out till it had spread.
Yeah, my dad's had spread. He had stomach problems and kept going to the doctors and they didn't pick it up. And then eventually he had a proper diagnosis and it had spread already to the spleen. And so he knew it was terminal from the get-go. But ours was an odd experience because for pancreatic because he said, it's terminal and I've got months. And actually, he survived another 3.5 years.
Yeah, which I wanted to talk to you about because I was like, it's because pancreatic cancer is, one, is so awful, and two, you don't normally discover it till it's spread.
Yeah.
So my dad had liver cancer. That's what they thought it was, first of all. He went literally yellow. And then they were like, oh, it's liver cancer. Then they went, oh, it's pancreatic. Actually, it's obviously been here longer than we realised. Now it's you've got no time at all. So that's normally what happens with pancreatic is you just... It doesn't show its face until it's popped up somewhere else. But your dad survived for another 3.5 years. That's amazing.
But it wasn't... It's not a great... The reason is because it was like the second thing they said, my parents said when they told me, they were like you know, it's cancer and it's terminal. And because my dad wrote for The Guardian and they covered his health insurance.
Oh, right, yeah, yeah.
So but I've got these quite lofty left-wing views. So really the third thing my mum said was, he's having private healthcare and we're not going to discuss it, Amy. And I was just like, okay. She's like, no judgment. So he got private health cover. And they were using treatments that were so new. They'd only been tested in France, not even in the UK.
Wow.
So the NHS couldn't offer it.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was so new and great that it kept him alive for a lot longer. And he was really like the poster boy for it for a while. And they used to use his scans at conferences and his doctors at the Royal Marsden. They were like travelling around with like talking about it. And he was really
roll up,
proud.
Roll up, Liz, tell you about the story. Oh my God.
Yeah. So we were always really grateful for that because we had all this extra time and he worked till a few weeks before.
Wow.
And yeah, I think a lot of people... I think when you get a diagnosis of a terminal illness, you start grieving immediately.
Yeah.
So actually, by the time he died, I'd kind of been already coping with the loss for this time. So actually, it was a hellish 3.5 years. But
did he get very sick during those 3.5 years, or did it kind of stay quite sort of the same for a while?
It was, because it's funny with cancer, because it's the chemo or radiation that makes you ill.
Yeah, not the cancer.
Yeah, and I don't think it didn't make him feel as bad as other people. He used to feel really sick for certain days of the cycle of treatment, and that was very hard, and he'd get very low, but then it would be fine later on. But then my boyfriend at the time, his mother had had it, and she'd recovered, but her chemo symptoms were so awful. She would just throw up for 2 weeks, and I mean, he was relatively lucky in some respects. Yeah, but he carried on working in a way that other people just simply couldn't. So he clearly wasn't.
And so they gave him this, you know, new exciting treatment. And then what happened towards the end? Did it sort of just had spread so much that it just...
I think the treatment stopped working the summer before he died. The results were getting less and less impressive. And then at one point they said, I think we're going to need to swap treatments. And then eventually they had to just stop doing anything. It just got... Your whole body just packs in. Like, he was getting symptoms all around his body that were technically nothing to do with the cancer, but it's just your immune system just going. Yeah, so eventually it just stopped. Which we always knew would happen.
So it kind of just bought him that magic.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Patrick Swayze, also in the Pancreatic Cancer Club.
Yeah, and thinking about Jobs, I think. Steve Jobs had it.
Yes, someone asked me that.
He treated it naturally.
No.
So this is the thing, is that, like...
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I don't know about you, but when my dad got diagnosed, I researched a lot, and a lot of what was coming up was people who were refusing medical treatment. They were doing, like, Gerson therapy, and I got quite into it. Then the person whose blog I followed died of cancer, and her mother died of cancer as well. So I'm really happy I didn't persuade my dad. I mean, I suppose he died anyway, so just thinking about it doesn't make any sense. I got really into, like, I bought him a juicer and juiced him stuff and did all this stuff. There's a lot of stuff online about that.
There's so much stuff. I mean, it's difficult. So I was 15, so this was before the internet. Really,
yeah.
Like, I think it just existed, but you couldn't Google stuff and be like, "Oh, what should we do?"
Yeah.
Which, in a way, is good because you can't know. You don't know. But my dad got really into. My parents are big hippies, anyway, so they were. You know, there was lots of, like, Reiki healing, Chinese herbs, along with the chemo.
Yeah.
And I remember the Chinese herbs being just the most disgusting.
Oh no! What were you drinking it?
No,
as well?
Just the smell. You had to boil them up in the kitchen, and it would produce this, like, brown liquid, and he would drink it. And I remember him drinking it, like, trying not to be sick. And but I do think I'm sort of pro all that alternative stuff because I think but I'm sort of pro along with the chemo.
That's the thing, isn't it?
I think
it?
Don't walk away from the big drugs.
It's very brave.
Yeah. If it works, great. If it doesn't, it's a big risk, isn't it?
Yeah, and it seems, I suppose, if you've got family as well. I mean, I don't think my dad was not a hippie. Yeah. He would drink his juice while, like, holding his nose, and then he'd have, like, a fry-up and loads of wine for lunch with his colleagues. But I think that the doctors always said to him, well-being is really essential. Like, have a good life. That will help you.
Yeah.
So I think the alternative stuff probably does help in a way because it keeps you feeling like you're doing something for yourself. Yeah. Or...
So were you with him when he actually died?
The week before he died, it was New Year's Eve. So that's why there's another big... There's just so many big days. They said he's probably got very little time, like, you might want to stay over tonight. But then he survived till the 5th. So we'd actually moved in and...
So was this in the hospital or
this
hospice?
This was in the hospital. Yeah, he hadn't moved. And... I kept calling it the hotel, and that gives you, like, an inkling of what the experience was like. We just lived there.
Yeah.
And every night they would just give us a bed and we'd have shifts, so someone was always with him. And my mum and brother were with him, and I wasn't, because I'd pop out for walks and stuff.
Yeah, of course.
But I had my headphones plugged in, but I wasn't listening to anything, so I suddenly looked down at my phone, I had 17 missed calls from my brother, and I was like... Oh shit, and then I just knew and went back. But so a big part of me feels guilt that I wasn't there, but at the same time, it was very rare that the three of us were there.
Of
it was
course,
normally two or
yeah.
one. And then, yeah.
How do you feel about that now? Do you still feel bad, or do you feel like you've forgiven, you know, you shouldn't feel guilty?
Yeah.
But I know that I understand you feel guilty for the most insane things when somebody's died.
I still feel guilty, actually. The thing that I hate saying, and I haven't actually really told people apart from my mum and brother, is I was in a shop returning something, and that makes me feel really weird, because what happened was I got the missed calls and I didn't know what to do, and I went to the tills and returned it even though I didn't care. And it's such a weird thing, as the person was serving me, I kept thinking, my dad just died, and they were, and I didn't know what to do.
Oh God, yeah.
And I thought, I don't know why I'm doing this, I don't know why I'm at the tills. And then I got a taxi back to the hospital, because I don't know, walk away. It was one of those really chatty cabbies, and I just kept thinking, my dad's died. And then I got that. And I think the guilt of being in a shop, and I've got all sorts of, like, guilt about buying things anyway, and, like, shopping. So it just feels... And I remember talking to my mum and brother about my guilt, and the way that they... responded was so quick that they'd clearly been thinking about me feeling guilty, as though either, oh, Amy's going to feel guilty or she should feel guilty will reassure her that...
I think, I mean, it's so hard. I don't think you should feel guilty at all. I have experience with a friend who, his mum was very sick and he left the room and again went for a walk because he just couldn't handle it.
Yeah.
And she died. And he felt, I remember talking to him about it and he was like, why did I? And I was like, the pressure that you're under in those situations, I think you have to think you're, you know, the parent would want you to go and get some...
He wanted me to get the money back for the cardigan, exactly. Which wasn't even good quality. It was 100% acrylic.
I think it's really hard to judge yourself. Like, I think you have to think, if a friend told you that story, you'd be like, oh, don't be silly. You were just in shock. And when stuff like that happens, I remember... My dad was in a hospice and I was outside having a cigarette.
Really? Yeah, you should feel good.
I know. So I was with him. We went back when he died, but I was, at one point, I was outside having a fag. And I remember telling someone that and they weren't very, they were like, I can't believe you were smoking.
No.
But it was, you know, I was a teenager and they obviously weren't very, actually, it was a teacher. And I remember thinking at the time, I just said, you know what, let's be honest. I told this teacher, oh, I was smoking when my dad was in the hospice. And she was like, oh, that's ridiculous. There's your father dying of cancer and there's you smoking. And I said, come back to me when your dad's dying of cancer and tell me what you would do.
That's so audacious.
Yeah, but I think people are when she obviously had no experience of it.
Yeah. Oh, I've never had anyone say anything. I would not take that very well.
Yeah, but that's the thing. Is like you do all sorts of strange things. Yeah. And especially if you'd been there for a week or, you know, five days.
We've been there for so long. And I did know it's highly likely.
Yeah.
We'd normally nip out once a day each. And I would go, because he was in South Kensington. So I would go up to Hyde Park or sometimes to the Natural History Museum. And I kind of wish it had happened when I was there, because they're, like, better things to say.
It would have more romantic view about it. Because I was looking at the dinosaurs.
Yeah, I was standing under a carcass of Brontosaurus. But I think I knew that something would happen. Yeah. And for 5 days, we were expecting any minute now. So, yeah.
You've just reminded me. Oh, this is sharing.
I admitted about the cardigan, it's really bad.
This is really bad. My mother-in-law was really sick and we knew she was going and I was really struggling. Oh, God, I feel so awful. I was really struggling to deal with it. Just, again, she'd been very sick for a long time.
Yeah. What did she?
She had cancer as well and they'd been caring for her for a long time. And my husband was at the house, her house, and I was at our home and I was supposed to go round there. I was going around there, but I just thought to myself, do you know what, I can't face it. I'm going to finish reading The Hunger Games. I'm going to finish this book.
Yeah.
Because I was obsessively reading The Hunger. Yeah. I think I was on book 3, actually. I think it was like, you know, it was the end. And I thought, I'm just going to read this because I just can't get out of bed yet and do it yet. I need some... And then they rang and were like, oh, it happened this morning. And I felt... Again, you feel so...
Yeah.
Like, I should have got up an hour... If I got up an hour
but
earlier...
hearing it, I'm saying, no, don't feel guilty. Exactly. I understand that you do,
But when it's you, you feel like... And I remember at the time thinking, like, what are you doing? But I do think it's also a bit of survival. Like, part of your brain is like, you're not ready. You can't cope with that right now. You need to be in a shop by your own cardigan. That's actually probably the best place for you. Or reading a book. Like, just...
Yeah, definitely. And that just will not affect their death in any way.
Yeah.
It just won't.
Yeah.
I don't even think my dad knew. He definitely didn't know how there for him we were.
Yeah, my dad didn't, definitely, especially towards the end. Like, he had no clue who was in the room. Like,
no.
I think he seemed to be aware of my mum, but, like, me and I have a brother as well. Is your brother older or younger?
Younger.
Oh, older. And I think he definitely didn't, I don't think he was really aware that me and my brother were there, particularly.
But it's funny, because I don't want recognition, but I kind of... I think my dad, for a cancer sufferer, had the ideal death of your loyal family there till the end. It's almost Victorian or something. But he just didn't know. Like, you think, well, I just want to die in my bed, surrounded by people who love me. He basically had that and just... And actually got annoyed with us, because on New Year's Eve when we moved in, we didn't really realise that's what was happening, but we... Because it was at Christmas and he's in hospital for ages and we're quite a sort of... The Hoggets love a good time, Carriad. So we were like, and we were kind of known in the hospital for it. We'd bring like food and drinks in, we'd
have
Christmas
a good time.
Eve, like presents.
Yeah.
The nurses would come and be like, oh, it's a party. We'd be like, welcome. But on New Year's Eve, I think we got like a takeaway and we were watching Modern Family. And my dad was, and we were like, Dad, we're going to stay. And he's like, I don't, like, you have to go. Because we were too loud. He's like, just go, like, please leave. And we were all like, oh, but we're here for you. Like, I love you so much. And he's like, you, like, just get out.
Just give me some peace.
Yeah. So, I mean, we just left, me and my brother left the room. But I don't think, yeah, he really knew.
Those last few days, I think, yeah, really, it disappears, doesn't it? Like, it's just, they can't. You know, someone is dying, they can't really... But it's so important that you know, you are there, and you were there. So you got back in the cab and went back there.
I went back to the hospital and he was there and...
Did you see him?
Yeah, I did see him. And that was quite shocking because I've never seen a dead person before. Sorry.
That's okay.
But the bit that I found interesting was that... I'm really self-conscious. There was quite a lot of shame attached to it because it's a dead body. And my dad was like yellow and had he looked sunk. He looked like a drawing of a dead body. And my aunt came. My aunt's my mum's sister and she's a nurse. And she'd come from Scotland and she'd sort of sensed it was weird timing. She was on the train when he died, about to come to see us. And she came straight in and we were like, oh, don't come in. It felt like embarrassing. And she just went straight in. And that felt so amazing that another human, like it was just, it just felt natural. Like it wasn't, and I think we're funny about death. We don't see it. We put makeup on dead bodies and try and make them look alive. And, you know, the fact of having someone else see it, it's just a dead body. It's really natural. Really reassure me.
Did you feel, the thing I've heard, it's like there's a sort of a spell, isn't there? It's like time has stopped around this you and the person. And then when everybody else comes in, you sort of go, oh, right, I see life is going to be like this. Yeah, it's going to carry on.
It's just carrying
on. But that weird moment when it's you and, your dead father, and it's just like, it's so still and so weird.
Yeah.
And it's really, I know, that was the first... Yeah, that was the first dead body I've seen. I've seen some more since then.
Have you?
Yeah, but that was the first. My dad was the first. And it is the strangest.
Yeah.
It's the strangest thing. Especially, obviously, this is it's your parents.
Yeah. But they don't look like them. My dad didn't look. And then because a weird experience for me was that... So my dad is a journalist. And he wasn't famous at all, but he was very slight in the public eye. And it was a slow news week. And so it was in the news the next day.
Oh, wow.
I mean, we were really sensitive to it, but it felt like it was everywhere.
Yeah.
And there were pictures of him, and he used to be quite chubby, and he was always laughing and everything. And suddenly we would give lots of images of him. It was almost unrecognisable, because that's who we'd been with for ages. And it was actually quite nice to see that no one else will ever know, really, what it was like at the end. But, the next day we were full of, younger versions of him kind of everywhere. Yeah. Not everywhere, but
did you sort of have to then read about him on imagine? Was it comforting in a way?
I actually liked it because it wasn't, there are some bits I found hard, like I heard a piece about him on Radio 4 that I hadn't known was gonna be on and I did not like hearing his voice. And that other people don't have to deal with that.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And then we're watching the news and they reported it as just TV footage of him and like that was horrible. That's not normal to have.
So you're just sitting there listening to the radio and something your dad's voice comes on with no warning.
And it still can happen every now and then.
And Amy, that's really hard.
It's really horrible. And it doesn't really happen particularly anymore, but when last year when all the famous people were dying, I just thought for their families. Can you imagine? You have no control. Unless you live in a bubble, you'll just hear them all the time. So that was hard, but the print versions I found comforting.
Yeah.
And people, it meant that, it felt like other people missed him, which obviously not in the way that we did, but that felt special. Like, I don't know, I liked it, but... I also liked, I didn't really have to tell anyone. Like, I told all my best friends
that's
knew.
That's true, yeah. So everybody kind of knows. It's like people Facebook.
Honestly, it's just done. And it means that people, it's so rare that I had to say to someone, sorry, my dad's just died. Or everyone just knew. So just less admin.
Do you ever listen to, because he used to host a show on Radio 4.
Yeah, he used to host the news quiz. And no, I don't.
Yeah, I was going to say, do you have it there so you could listen? Or you just...
Yeah, I think we've got loads of cassettes, which I don't dig up, but I know, I remember once, because every now and then, if I'm tired, I don't really do it anymore, but I used to, part of my grief was, like, if I was drunk and I'd come home on my own, I would sometimes, like, really indulge that. And weirdly, if I got really upset and called my brother, high chances are he'd be doing the same thing at the same time.
Oh, wow.
And once I was in, like, San Francisco, and I'd gone out with friends and I was drunk and sad after, and my brother was in Costa Rica. We sound like brats, but it just happened that way. And at the same time difference, we called each other crying. But that's the time that I would be maybe looking him up and watching something to make myself cry. It's...
I can't imagine having the ability to be able to access that much.
Do you not have any...
Well, I was talking about this. We talk about this a lot because I'm the analogue age, so the memories are not as accessible.
Yeah, yeah.
So I did a weird thing the other day. I Googled him for the first time ever because I was like, I've never Googled, and nothing came up.
What did your dad do?
He worked in PR and marketing and stuff, but it was all pre-digital.
Yeah, yeah.
So he just completely didn't have a website. He wrote a couple of books, and I eventually found the books on, like, they were on PR and marketing. Very exciting. But I was like, wow. And we talk about this a lot on Griefcast. People who are digital say to me, oh, I've saved their text message or their WhatsApp.
Yeah.
And I think it must be interesting. You can literally find footage of him very easily, whereas other people have said, oh, there's a DVD. I might have to go and put it, you know what I mean? So it's a really... There's a really, I don't know what the difference is, but there's, like, the analog Grievous.
That like must be so different.
Yeah, I have photos and a VHS. Yeah. So if I wanted to, and I've talked about this before, I have a dictaphone recording of him.
Oh, really?
Which I now don't know how to play because I can't find the old, it's like a tape dictaphone, you know, those really old.
I can't even imagine what it looks like.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Oh, if someone has one, send it to me. So I think there's that thing of, like, the analogue Grievers.
Mm.
It's much harder for me to dig up those pictures than it would be for you to say you could just, like, you can go on YouTube or go on Radio 4. So maybe it's, I don't look at them so much because it's such a, like, I'd have to go to my mum's house, go on a chair, get the box down from the cupboard, find the photos. Like, yeah, it'd be a real palaver.
It's just a click away, so it's more sort of tempting. I think I'm more... that desensitized to it,
probably.
But...
because it's so available.
Yeah, it's so available.
But I'm the same. If it was a click away, I'd be clicking. Like, there's no way I wouldn't be clicking. Especially when you're sad. Like...
This is a really weird comparison, but it's almost like checking your exes online.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, this is going to make me feel bad.
Yeah.
I don't want to know. But you just sometimes do it, and it feels awful. But I wonder, like... because my dad wasn't on Twitter or Facebook or anything. And I do wonder about... the even more digital age of people who are...
Oh, you could just go through their tweets and see what they were thinking.
What photo they took of breakfast that morning or whatever. But, yeah, it's funny to have to deal with, like, the texts or, like, I was deleting old WhatsApp conversations the other day because they do eat a lot of storage
on
your phone.
They eat so much storage. Insane. And then it always asks you, are you sure you want to delete it?
It's like, yeah, I don't need to. Yeah. But I wouldn't delete my dad's ones. Yeah, you just think, and then they lose their phone number. There's just all sorts of bits around death that you don't really think about.
Do you meet people who knew your dad as well?
Yeah, and that's actually, and last week or a couple of weeks ago, I was doing a radio play, and the writer came up to me and said, she said, you know, I used to know your dad. And also, because my granddad was an academic, and he had his moment, like he had his moment when his main book was... everyone read it for a bit, and so she said, I read your granddad's stuff as well. And so my dad's parents died a couple of months after he died.
So
they're all linked in my head, and I was just about to go and record, so I was a bit emotional.
Yeah.
But I really like hearing it. I like anyone saying, I don't know what it is, but like even if my dad's friends get upset or anything, I like it. I like hearing that he, But I think it's quite a brave thing to do. And I remember... someone else coming up to me and saying, did your dad ever see this show that I'd done? And he said, I really liked his work. And I could tell he was so nervous. And I always like, reassure people that even if I get upset, I really appreciate him saying.
I think it's comforting.
Yeah.
It is comforting. And I think it is brave for someone to say that to you.
Yeah.
Because it must be scary to say that to his daughter. But
you don't know the reaction. Like, I could just burst into tears. But it is brave. And I think it's that you want your loved one remembered positively and, like... if people kept coming up to you saying, oh, I loved your dad's work in PR or whatever, you'd probably still feel like, thank you. Yeah, yeah. It's just that for me, it's more likely to happen. So that's the flip side of all the people who lost, well, you know, the famous people last year.
Yeah, I suppose it's just, it's more present, isn't it? That's, yeah, it sort of keeps them present amongst you. So then, so his mum and dad were still alive when he...
Yeah, but they were so senile, they didn't know.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they didn't know.
But then they just died afterwards so that you don't... God, because that's just... So you had to go through that as well, like...
Oh, yeah. It was really... 2014 was like... It was just...
Some years are just fucking...
I mean, that was really, really
I've had
bad.
Years where it's like, how many funerals are we going to?
Funerals, and then the memorials. Oh, so we had three funerals, two memorials, and just a lot of... And I'm small, but I was very skinny at the time. So yeah. I kept having to buy black dresses, but I couldn't fit in anything, things in the shop. And I remember being like, you know, high street, like, this is a really bad time for me. I'm like... so grieving and small, but I can't even find dresses for my own relatives' funerals. Like,
I remember getting quite excited when I found there was a year of like six funerals, and it was like when I found a good black dress, I was like, I can wear this next time.
And you can recycle.
Oh, you totally can. I have a funeral dress, which has come out so many times, still works.
And then you'd be like, oh, I can nip that, like whip that one out. I did bump into my dad's friends once when I was. I think it was the eve of like another memorial or funeral, and they said, how are you doing? And I was like, said that I got a funeral look down, and I meant like dress, and but they thought I meant expression. They were like, oh, what do you mean? And then I explained, but I love the thought that they thought that I had like perfected my sad face.
I've got a really good sad face, guys.
Yeah.
It really makes me look sad, but also pretty.
Yeah, so I like tilted the right angle. Yeah.
Do you remember the... like the couple of days afterwards, that weird moment. So you obviously went back, you saw him.
Yeah.
How was that the first couple of days?
I can't really, I think it was a funny one. I didn't have work or anything. My brother was the same. And my aunt, as I said, she came to live with us. So we were just very looked after. Mm. And there were always people like nipping in. And I used to go and just, you know, with tea and casseroles and stuff. And I used to go on these long walks. It was really beautiful weather. But it was quite a... I then had a job and I had to go... I was on the road for like a month, a few weeks after he died.
Oh, wow.
And that was... It was in lots of ways great, but in terms of my bereavement, like hell on earth.
Yeah.
And I remember feeling like ripped from the womb because at home I had just my family there and like really well-meaning neighbours and family friends just supporting you and... Mm. And like hugs on tap, and then like I was just in a hotel on my own, like, you know, quite really sad for ages. So it was quite a nice time in some respects.
When you did the job, did you talk about it or did you just keep quiet?
The job, people didn't really say anything, and I think that's one of the things where I think they thought that would be easier for me, and it just so happens that it isn't.
I don't think it's ever easier.
But then one of the people working on that show lost someone the next season and didn't want to talk about it.
It's so hard, isn't it? Because I just... Yeah, I suppose I come from a place... Maybe it's being actors of like, let's talk.
Yeah.
And I think it's... I do find it hard when I encounter people who don't want to talk about it, obviously, because I do a podcast about it.
Yeah, you're
like,
really
I'm big into talking about it. And I do find it... And I've had to... That's a lesson I've had to learn of that... People grieve differently,
yeah.
And it's if they're not talking, they might be okay. But it's obviously I'm such a school of like, but why wouldn't you? Yeah, and I suppose it's hard when you think. I think it's hard when people don't talk to you because they think that's what you want. Like they're like, oh, I'm doing you a favor, and you're
just
like,
give me the option.
I'll
shut you down if it's.
Yeah, I will say, oh, you know what? I don't want to talk about it right now. But if you don't ask me, I don't get to. And I guess you must have felt that weird feeling of like I'm feeling all this stuff, but no one.
No, and I felt like a bit sort of like damaged goods or a bit, not dirty, I can't think of the right word, but like, oh, stay away from Amy. Like I had this sort of shameful thing. So yeah, I definitely prefer talking about it. And if I hear that someone else has lost someone, I would normally connect with them. But then sometimes, you know, they don't want to talk about it and that's their choice.
But I don't know. I do think it's nice. Like I remember, if I didn't want to talk about it, I do remember the people that asked.
I think there's, you learn so much about other humans and also the people in your life from going through something like that. Like, mm-hmm. I remember how every person treated me.
Yeah.
Even the ones I reassured. But for the most part, everyone was absolutely amazing, and I felt a lot closer to people.
Did you have any of that weird people who don't understand, or...?
I had people who didn't really care to check in, particularly.
Yeah.
I didn't... Yeah, for the most part, everyone was great, because I obviously choose great people.
Yeah.
Some people were quite... weren't great, but for the most part, everyone was really good. And I remember one of my friends saying that she felt quite privileged to have grown closer to me and the rest of that particular friendship group of ours. Like,
yeah,
people were... But the thing is that I was, like, the first one. I didn't know anyone else.
Oh, really?
Which is crazy, because he died when I was 27.
That is...
Which is...
Wow.
Yeah. But yeah. No one at the time... And subsequently, people have lost parents, or their parents are really ill. And I feel like I'm in a phase now where everyone's parents are ill. But at the time, yeah, I was really the only one, so no one really knew what to say.
Yeah.
And I also noticed that... I think it's funny, if you're a comedian, I don't know if you found this, but you... have a lot of guilt about bringing a vibe down, and you know how you're basically trained in making people feel a certain way.
Yeah.
So if I was in a social context where people were saying, how's your dad, or are you okay after you died, I can give them enough information so they think that I'm opening up, but I will spin it at the end and make a joke or something so people are relaxed. And often I leave feeling fake, or like, why did I do that? But then I had this really... a weird experience where a friend of mine, because normally I kind of made things seem better than they were, because I didn't want people to not want to hang out with me or something, and a friend of mine said, how's your dad? And it was bad. It was that summer I mentioned that his treatment had stopped working, and I just couldn't be bothered to put a spin on it. So I said, oh, it's not great, like, his treatment's not working, he's depressed, we're really worried, he's sick all the time, we might have to pay for a different treatment which will financially ruin us or something, it's really bad. And she was really overwhelmed. And then I said, my parents are going on holiday. I think just to relax, but it's not going to be nice for them. And she said, oh, I'm really glad they're going on holiday. And I said, okay. And she's like, that's great. And I said, okay, yeah. I think I emphasised it wasn't, but anyway. And then a mutual friend got in touch and said, oh, I heard from so-and-so that your parents are going away. That's great. And that was the thing that got taken away.
What?
And I was but that for her, she doesn't want me to be in pain. She doesn't want my dad to be in pain. She doesn't want to spread. They just want to hear. It's not even malicious, because they're not. Those two, I could tell them negative things, but that's what they want to hear.
That's so incredible.
And if you say, yeah, it's really hard, my dad died, but don't worry, I've got loads of support, and... you know, I'm really looking after myself. People are like, oh, great.
Amy's got loads of support.
It's really
counted.
It's just really... And
that's really... I find that really interesting, because you're right. People just... It's not malicious. It's just, like you said, it's overwhelming. And their brain just goes, oh, I don't want my friend to be sad. Her parents are going on holiday. Her parents, and that's a little thought that gets rolled up. And when I speak to so and so, how's Amy?
Her parents are going on holiday. That's great.
That's good. They're going away. Yeah, that's nice. That is incredible. And I think I really appreciate that thing you said. I do that all the time. I don't know if you have this. I put such a spin on things, and then I go home and I go, why does nobody care? I'm so sad and no one cares. And you go, you didn't tell anyone. You were sad.
You just didn't tell anyone.
You literally didn't.
Yeah.
People asked you. Friends who've known you for 25 years said, how are you? And you made it sound like you were pretty fucking great.
Doing brilliantly.
And inside you were feeling so sad. And I've really tried the last year to not do that. And it is...
Oh, really?
Oh, it's so hard. It's so hard. And I think it comes from, as my therapist will tell you, you don't want to be vulnerable.
Yeah.
And I think that's a big thing with comedians, is we don't want to be vulnerable. So we use comedy and laughs to be like, I'm not vulnerable. Hey, I'm
doing really well.
I'm basically fine. You don't have to worry about me. I'm not vulnerable. I'm not a weak person.
Yeah.
So all the jokes go over there, which I'm sure must come from my dad dying at 15 as well, because I remember, you know, trying to tell teenagers, like...
I can't imagine. It was hard at 27.
Yeah.
I can't imagine.
But very... I was lucky. I had a couple of friends who got it, and I had a couple of girls whose dads had died.
Yeah.
So they were the cool ones who'd be like, I know this is bullshit, and I know you are in pieces. And I'd be like, yeah, great. But then those friends you have as a teenager, it very quickly went, oh, I don't need to be your friend, because they'd just be like, oh, how's your dad? And I'd be like, oh, they said he's dying. Oh,
babe.
Are you going to come to Catherine's party? And I'd be like, oh, I sort of can't, because I sort of am aware of my own mortality now. So yeah. I can't have that bottle of Archers anymore. And you just see this face of like, oh, like, I don't get it. Why should they? You know, they were 15. Having
I wonder
a
what
nice
they'd
time.
Be like at 27.
Yeah.
Because they might, yeah, you just... I feel like I was always trying to be fun, and then I would snap, because I remember once, like, I gave up drinking for a bit, and someone was like, why have you given up drinking? And I was like, because I go home after a night out and I weep while you sleep, or something like that. And they were like, okay. But it's just like, I'll be so upbeat, and then I'll just... But
that's just, that's, I do that as well, and it's so hard for people to help you, because they're like, but you seem
But you
so
said
fine.
You were fine. I actually got a bereavement letter from a friend who battles depression. And the whole letter was about, it was a really sweet letter, but it was about how she couldn't believe how upbeat I was for 3.5 years. She was like, you came to parties, she's like, how, she was really impressed. But I was like, wow, I'm a good actor. Like,
yeah.
And then.
But that is, it's acting.
It is, it's just acting, yeah.
You're used to pretending to feeling fine. Like, we have the ability, and like you said, I think with our work as well, you can be feeling so awful and suddenly you have to be in front of the camera and
be funny and
smiling. So you get very good at switching it off. And the danger is you get too good at switching it off.
And you're even doing it to yourself, maybe.
Yeah, I think so.
Also think, for me, it's like wanting to be liked. Yeah. I didn't want to not be invited to Catherine's party. Like, I really wanted Catherine to invite me. And then I had the weirdest thing after... Because I'm very, like, I'm a coper. And my mother's a psychologist.
Oh, wow.
So that's why we talk about feelings a lot, but... and I do like yoga, and I like the image of me as just being very self-sufficient and stuff.
Yeah.
And I'd done most of my dad dying single. Like, I dated people, but I broke up with someone and I was like doing this. I started dating someone right after he died, and I was really self-conscious that he would not want to go out with someone who was crying.
Yeah.
And it was maybe like 3 months after.
Oh, wow.
And he was... I honestly think of all the people in the world to pick, like, he was the worst person anyone could go out with. And I remember him admitting that he knew, and I was like, yeah, but it's fine. And I was like, I'm actually coping really well. I do a lot of yoga. And he was like, oh, okay. And I was like, no, I'm really good. And we had this 1 week that was like a funeral on the Thursday, granddad's funeral, grandma dying on the Monday, dad's memorial on the Wednesday, and this guy dumped me the next day.
Oh, my God.
And I remember being like, we had not been together long at all.
Yeah.
It's just not what I needed. But I don't think you think he did anything wrong. I really don't, because I'd covered it up. Like, and no one else in the world would do something like that. He was a really shitty person, obviously. But I think I'd been so... I remember saying to him the weekend before, this is going to be a hard week for me. And he was like, oh, okay. And I was like, I mean, I'll be fine. I'll be fine. I'm really...
You know, I've got 3 funerals, a memorial service, and I'm still grieving.
My grandma's about to die tomorrow, I think.
Yeah.
And he... I just think... I'm not saying he didn't do anything wrong, but I gave the impression of being so copy that someone didn't even wait a day to dump me.
And it's really hard, because... People, like you said, people want you to cope, and you want to cope.
Yeah.
You don't want to fall to pieces.
If you're trying to fake it till you make it, you just never quite make it.
Yeah, and I totally get where you're coming from. And it's hard sometimes to admit, oh, I need to be broken.
Yeah.
I need to fall to pieces for a bit. And it took me fucking ages to fall to pieces, because I just was like, no, no. Because I think you think, oh, if I go, I'll never come back from there. So if I can just keep up the yoga and the smiles, we'll get through this. And that's sort of good advice if you've broken up with someone. Like, that's sort of like, hey, you know what? That's great. But when you're grieving, it's sort of, you have to give it the space. And I also think you're in shock. I think you're 3 months after, you're in shock, especially as your dad had been ill for so long. Just, you know, you've got into that state of like, oh, he's ill and that's what we do. He's there and he's ill. And then to have that change, I think your brain and your body are still going, what?
What the hell is going... And also, it's so funny, like, looking back, I had loads of weird physical things. Like, not being able to sleep, or I used to grind my teeth so hard in the night. I used to wake people. So many people in my bed constantly waking. If I was staying
over someone. Yeah, I grind so bad.
I had to have a tooth out. Or just, like, you know, weird things, and then someone say, a doctor would say, like, oh, have you got anything bad going on? And I'd be like, no, I'm fine. And they'd say, oh, my dad's That's called terminal cancer, but I'm fine. I mean, I said that to doctors.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, because these physical things, it takes your brain a while sometimes to go, oh, maybe it's because I'm really sad.
I think in the West, we don't connect body and mind so as much as we should.
Yeah.
So you don't really realise how humans are so funny. You just think, I was really aware of, because I was getting into yoga-y stuff. Mm. And I remember going to this with this Kundalini class, and they said, can you hold someone in your head who needs healing? And I was like, oh, my dad. So I'm like holding him in my head, and then my brain starts freaking out thinking about my route home, and I get quite upset. And they held my dad in high regard. What if he was a homeless person or something? I mean, he would not have had this treatment. And then I remember there was something horrible in the news, like an earthquake or something. I can't remember what it was, but I remember feeling like, God, my sadness is not that bad. But that thought keeps coming back. So I do keep thinking it's not, I get, is it that bad or is that not that bad?
It's really hard because you feel so sad and you feel you have that big, like, oh, this is, you know, you're sad for yourself. Mm. I'm so sad. Why is this happening to me? And then you read about something else. You're like, oh, you turn on the news. And you're like, Jesus Christ, I'm so lucky. But I think it's really important to own your own sadness and go, you can't keep comparing. Of course, there's this massive scale. Yeah. And, you know, I meet people, we talked about this before on the podcast, of like, you know, you were 27, I was 15. Mm. So then people go, oh, God, you were 15. Mm. I have a friend who was 8. And I talked to someone the other day, he was 1. So there's always this scale. There'll always be somebody worse and always someone better. But that doesn't take away your pain and how important your pain is and your sadness. I think it's really easy to go, oh, well, I'm so lucky, I shouldn't. Look at all the other people in the world. It's like, yeah, but you feel sad now. My husband's dad passed away when he was about 27.
So he's lost both his parents.
Which...
That's worse, he wins.
Yeah, and it's funny because for years I had like the dead dad trump card, which we all have.
Yeah.
Then his dad died and we both had it. And then his mum died and I was like, oh man, I can't beat this.
Yeah.
Now you win everything. He used to say...
But I'm a pretty privileged white girl. Like, my dad died when I was 27 and that is generally the worst thing that's happened to me. I do feel like I shouldn't feel that bad about it, but I also at some level don't feel that bad about it. Like, even when he was in hospital at the end, I was like, we can afford to get taxis anywhere. We can afford to just buy food in. If you had to deal with this while you had no money, we had the private healthcare. Like,
I was like, it doesn't make you any less sad. It doesn't make your pain any less easier to deal with because it's still painful. It's just shit.
And the relationships are always different as well.
Yeah.
Like, it depends. 3.5 years of him having treatment, I'd said everything I needed to say to my dad. People who get a knock on the door from the policeman saying there's been an accident, I think that's worse. But then I had 3.5 years of not sleeping, grinding my teeth and weird Kundalini chanting and like just being so embarrassing at parties and waking up thinking, I can't believe I've just said the worst.
I think the behaviour, even if your friends don't go through it or go through it much, like, everyone understands eventually. That's what I think. Like, even if they have
to wait.
Yeah, exactly.
Or thinking, because I feel like there's a correct way to grieve sometimes.
Yeah.
And you're like, maybe I'm not sad enough. Like, that's another anxiety that people have. I think, like, thinking that you're not, like, on the 3-year anniversary, I don't think I cried till really late. Thought, oh, why am I so, I'm not grieving enough?
Mm.
Or... because you do benefit as well in some really awful ways. Like, I'm much stronger, I think, now.
I
feel, like, able to cope. I'm much, like, in a lot of ways, a better person than before, and you feel guilty about that.
It's really...
I bought a flat with my inheritance money, and if anyone says anything to me, like, wow, I can't believe you've got a flat, I, like, slam them immediately. I feel so sick that I financially benefited.
But then there has to... When something's so awful, there has to be positives and negatives. Like, I just had a baby, and it's amazing, but there's also really shit things about it. And, like, that's, for me, what I really like, the thing about grief. Like, it isn't awful all the time. Like you said, you bring the wine to the hospital, you laugh.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you laugh after they've gone. Like, you get closer to your family. Like, there's so many other things that come out of it, which it does, I think it takes time.
I don't think I've ever laughed as much as I did in the hospital the week my dad died. I also have never felt so loved or loving. And I remember going to sleep thinking, oh, all my family around me, this could be the last night, but still feeling really cozy and like, and I laughed hysterically in his room on his deathbed. We just were laughing a lot, and I was reading. God, I'm really making myself sound like such a wanker, but I was reading The Prophet by and it was all about like joy and sadness, and it just thought, this is it, like they're so interlinked.
They are, and I think again it's the thing of like not feeling bad when you feel okay when you are grieving. It's okay to have days where you are happy, but when it first happens you do feel that guilt and you do feel like, oh God, should I be grieving more? And I remember, I think it was his second anniversary, we went out for dinner. And I was really pleased about the outfit I had on.
Was it really good?
It was so good. It was so good. And my brother's girlfriend at the time took the piss out of me. And that's...
Oh, for your outfit?
Yeah. I felt really good. And I was like, oh, this outfit's so cool. And I've got these vintage boots and I look so cool. And then she said something. And it was so easily smashed, like, my feelings.
Oh, yeah.
That I remember thinking, oh... It's okay to feel good because it's so easy to feel shit.
Yeah,
that you actually need to, those little moments where you are laughing and it's okay, don't feel guilty about them because they go so fucking quickly. Like, and not crying on the day of their anniversary. Like, sometimes you don't. Sometimes it just isn't there anymore. But because you've come from this extreme where you're crying all the time and it's everything's so raw, as that starts to fade and you know real life tucks itself in. It's an adjustment, I think, coming from the raw stage where you just cry all day.
And I find that my sadness just hits anytime. It just hits. God. And, like, that... Well, I let go of the anniversaries thing, so I was thinking, I'm not going to force sadness. That feels really weird. Yeah. It's going to hit me when it hits me, and that's just that. And like, every time I think, oh, I should be upset at this point because it's the anniversary, I'm, like, holding on to the image, but it doesn't really make sense. And then the image just pops up. When it pops up.
I think the anniversary is a really nice excuse to get together with family.
Yeah,
that's really what they are. And sometimes you really cry. Mm. And sometimes you don't at all. And it's like a really normal day. Or do you find if you see someone who looks like him...
Yeah.
I think especially because there are old men around, aren't there?
Oh, there are a lot of old men. Old men, like my dad used to dress in like pretty standard clothes, like a suit. And just a scarf and a coat, and I'll just see a man shuffling and they'll walk. Yeah. It just hits you. But I think I also miss when you, it's sort of the same with the breakup, but they still exist. When you lose someone you love who loved you, you still love them, but they don't love you anymore. And it's like, that's the weirdest feeling of he just doesn't love me anymore. I've lost that. And I miss the way my dad made me feel a lot, as well as everything about him. If anything happens in my career, I want to tell him.
Yeah.
And he was more excited than my mum or brother could ever be because they didn't want that career for themselves secretly. So they are so happy for me, but he would be more happy for me and a bit annoying about it. And he would also get really angry on my behalf a lot. So like if there was a train was messed up and like there was a big delay, I would call my dad for the sympathy. And I miss that so much. No one cares. If like I'm with EE and they're really bad, like the worst customer service, the worst everything, and no one gets upset about the way EE's treating me as much as my dad would have.
Would he have got really?
He'd have gone mad, and he'd have possibly written an article about how shitty they were.
Oh, nice.
Well, no, because it's not that doesn't make for good. Yeah, good journalism, but you miss the way that impact that person had on your life, and that creeps up.
Because it will always be there that he cared that much. That's all you can do is carry that with you.
Yeah, and remember it like me, because me and my mum and brother meet up every once a week, so we see each other a lot, and we are a lot of the time like remembering, even laughingly, the weird things that he would do.
That's nice that you have that closeness with them. I think that's really important, to have people who can remember.
I found this really surprised me, that because you're from a family of four, right?
Yeah.
It's a weird adjustment. The first time we went for dinner as a three and there's a missing, just an empty chair.
Yeah.
But then the dynamic shifts. So I realised, I don't want to be in a three, but if I had to be in a three, it would be with those two. Because, my dad, he's very witty, but he wasn't that silly. Whereas me, my mum and brother will end up bundling sometimes or just lose it over nothing. And the first Christmas we went away and just to kind of not have a normal Christmas. And we went to this We found this like deserted play park after a walk. I ended up going on the swings together, and I was on a swing with my brother. My mum was on this like bouncy, you know, this like rides that are like on the ground and like a spring. Yeah. She's like a 60 something old woman on this. I've never laughed so much ever as with those two then. I remember thinking I wouldn't have done that with my dad. Like he would have just not enjoyed it. So, and as a three, we've just got our own relationship. And when you lose someone, it shifts, but it's not always negative. It is a nice three. Like, I'd rather be in a four, but the three is lovely as well.
Yeah, no, totally. Like, the shift from four to three is really strange. But then I also think, because I have a very similar relationship, that my mum and my brother, we're very stupid together. And I think also because you've been through something so awful and you've survived it and you've somehow got through, why not fucking get on the spring and be stupid? Because you've just, look, my mum always goes, well, if you don't laugh, you cry. And so it became this thing of like, well, let's just laugh then. Let's just,
that's so nice.
Let's just be very, very silly. Oh, she became very silly. That's and has amazing. Continued to be very silly.
I think my dad like moderated us a bit. His catchphrase was, oh, my family are so weird. And like, I remember once we hid my mum under a blanket and we're like, Dad, we've lost Mum. Where's she gone? And he's like, I'm not coming through. I don't care. We're like, we're really worried. Can't find her. He like swarmed through and saw her like shaking under a rug. And it's like, and we knew, oh, this is so weird. But we don't have that person anymore to be like, why have you hidden your mum under a rug? And like, I don't know. She was always silly. She fine. Like, my mum started treating herself more.
Yes.
And oh, I'd be my like, God. Because I'm judgy about buying things, as I said. Yeah. And I'd be like, oh, another handbag. She'd be like, do you know what? Yeah, your dad just died and I'm buying a fucking handbag.
That's why my mum started buying all this jewellery. Oh. Like, not like super expensive, but just like a nice ring. I'd be like, oh, that's new. Well, I am going to treat myself, actually. Yeah. Actually, I am going to treat myself. Like, okay, that's, all right. That's
and
fine.
Like holidays, people invite my mum on holiday a lot, which is great. She's got a very busy social life.
Yeah.
But, you know, just another holiday.
There's an Oscar Wilde quote, which I always say to my mum, which I think it's in Important to Be Honest, but they say her hair turned quite gold with grief and my mum literally went blonde. After
really?
And I was like, oh yeah, that's my mum. Like, she went blonde. She started, she was always quite trendy, but she was like, fuck it.
You've got, yeah.
Fuck it. Why not? You've been through so much shit.
Yeah, definitely.
And I think it's what I think maybe we're more hung up about, like, oh, the correct way and the guilt. Yeah, yeah. And my mum was like, nah, like, life's too short. Like, which I think is an important lesson to remember. You might as well enjoy it.
Definitely is.
On that note, I should finish the podcast.
Have we really got...
Oh, yeah. No, but I could keep going.
Yeah, I know. It's...
Amy Hoggart, thank you so much for talking to me about your dad, Simon.
You can follow Amy on Twitter... @Amy_Hoggart, and for more info on pancreatic cancer you can go to the pcrf.org.uk or pancreaticcancer.org.uk.
Thank you for listening to Griefcast. I've been Carriad Lloyd. You can find me on Twitter @LadyCarriad, or you can tweet @TheGriefcast or email me thegriefcast@gmail.com. Music is provided by The Glue Ensemble, and you can find them at theglueensemble.com. Thank you for listening.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.